to the third case of the day, Moses versus Martin.
Moss.
The wrong.
Yeah. A little off. I apologize. Moss versus Martin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is John Curley. I represent William Moss in this case. This case comes to the court on the trial court's decision to grant a 12C motion to dismiss in favor of the defendants. I'm asking the court to reverse that decision, to send it back, to reinstate the case so that Mr. Moss can proceed with his claims of violation of due process and his claim of improper termination due to political affiliation. Now, the allegations in the complaint and the documents relied on by the trial court do, in our view, set forth sufficient facts to support a claim for relief. What the trial court did was fail to view the facts, the allegations, in a light most favorable to Mr. Moss. What the court did was simply look at this job description that applies to his position of chief of the highway sign shop and said, well, he makes policy, so therefore he can be discharged.
Maybe I didn't notice in the brief. Maybe we have. What is his salary? I'm curious about that.
His salary is not. We don't know. I mean, it's not in the record, to put it that way. I can tell you it's probably in about the $80,000 range, and I'm just making that statement
now,
based on experience.
Does his job with the signs, does he decide where particular signs go, or does he just do the putting them in the ground or whatever you do with signs?
Well, actually, he doesn't either. He doesn't.
So he doesn't decide whether there's going to be a stop sign or here or something?
No, those traffic engineers take care of that subject. Mr. Moss did not decide what signs go up, where the signs go up, or when they go up. That's done by other people. His job is simply related to maintenance and rehab issues, manufacturing and rehab.
He makes the signs, or presumably by. He doesn't make his little office doesn't actually manufacture, does it? He goes out and buys signs, presumably.
Well, the sign shop does do some fabrication.
They actually make signs.
They do some overlays. It's the maintenance and rehab part of it. So they do actually do some of the making process, so to speak.
Does he install the signs, or does he just make them?
He's in charge. His job is related to the.
So someone else goes out and puts them in the ground.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The separate districts throughout the state take care of doing that. He doesn't do that. In fact, he doesn't even oversee those particular crews that do that. That's done elsewhere. And that's an important question, or an important.
So he's buying steel or whatever these are, tin, whatever these things are made out of, and then he's making them and painting them or something. Is that what his operation does?
Well, they do overlays is how they do it for the most part. He'll look at somebody says to his sign shop, somebody above him says, look, we've got some signs that need rehabilitated because maybe they faded, for example.
Right.
Signs faded. So they may get that sign then sent to the sign shop, and they look at it and say, oh, yeah, we need to peel off this and put a new overlay. They don't necessarily manufacture a brand new sign from scratch. These signs are reusable.
Okay, but what if you have a new road or something and you need signs? So does he buy or make signs, or what does he do?
I think that's a fair reading of his description, is that he would look at buying or making a sign in his little shop.
His little shop has a budget of over $100 million, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it says sign system value, $104 million, and I'm reading from the job description. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's got $100 million.
Yeah, I thought it was $3,700,000 a year.
No. No, it doesn't say that at all that I can see.
He couldn't be spending $100 million a year pasting overlays onto signs.
No.
That couldn't.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, you could.
Well, that probably involves the salaries and benefits connected with the 25 people. And
I would say, I don't even think you'd get to $100 million with that.
Well, I'm not trying to build it to $100 million. I'm just going off what the briefs are.
If he has 25 people at $40,000, that's $1 million, right?
At most.
Yeah.
See, if you look at Mr. Moss's description, and I think you have to do it in the context.
Where is that 3.7? I know I saw a $3.7 million figure somewhere.
I did not put that in my brief.
But you don't remember it, yeah.
No. But if you look at Mr. Moss's description, really all he does is deal with the manufacture and distribution of signs that are installed by people elsewhere. He doesn't make the decision on what to do, when to do it, how to do it. That's done by traffic engineers. People far above him make those decisions. He doesn't do that. Mr. Moss's job is...
How many layers are there over him?
Very good question.
He reports to someone called the operations engineer?
He reports to the operations engineer, who then reports to somebody above him called the civil engineer.
And who's above the civil engineer?
Well, above the civil engineer in this particular structure of IDOT, what you're going to see is in IDOT you have 10 offices and divisions within IDOT. One of the divisions is the Division of Highways. Mr. Moss is in the Division of Highways. But then even the Division of Highways has 10 bureaus. So you can see the pyramid.
So he's in the Bureau of what, signs or something?
He is actually in the Division of Highways.
That's the division, but his bureau...
is the Bureau of Operations.
Bureau of Operations, and then is the person you call the civil engineer the director of that bureau?
He would report directly to the engineer of operations is who he would report to.
And that engineer of operations, does he report to the bureau director?
We don't know. There's no record to develop that, and that was one of the problems I had here was the court should have said, you know, this is a close enough question. This one needs to go to the jury. We don't even know the answers to these questions.
Ms. Curley, you started to describe, Mr. Moss's job, and then you got... Our questions came in there. What is, in your view, is his job?
His job is a technical professional job. His job is not one that sets broad policies of the Department of Transportation. His job is one that requires the exercise of professional judgment, technical judgment. You know, how do you put an overlay on a sign that's faded out? That's not political. That's simply, hey, what's the best process here that we can employ, or what is a process we can employ just to repair a sign? He's a repairman. That's what these people in this particular sign shop do. They repair signs.
Well, sometimes they make new signs.
Yeah, they make, yeah, sure. There may be a sign that comes in that it's so worn out and bent up you can't put an overlay on it, so the backing needs to be done too. But again, that requires just technical judgment. There's no political judgment involved here. His job is based on professionalism.
Does he have budget authority? Is there some level of money that he can spend without getting the approval of a superior officer?
No, he can make budget recommendations.
He has no discretionary funds?
He cannot say, I'm getting X dollars and that's what I'm going to use. He doesn't have that authority. He gives input. Granted, he does give input, but he doesn't have the ability to say, this is what I need, this is what I'm going to get, this is what you have to give me, and this is what I'm going to spend.
Well, what if, okay, that's a little different, but so suppose he makes a budget recommendation, they give him the $3.7 million. Now, can he use that money any way he wants? I mean, can he give a contract to someone for $3 million, or do his contracts have to be approved?
There is nothing in his description that gives him the ability to make a contract. He does not have that authority.
He doesn't have contract authority.
No.
He needs approval.
He's got to go somewhere else for that.
Yeah.
I see that I'm cutting well into my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Feinerman?
Good May it please the Court, Mr. Curley, I'm Gary Feinerman from the Office of the Illinois Attorney General here on behalf of the defendants, appellees, who are three officials at the Department of Transportation. To get to some of the factual questions that were asked of Mr. Curley, Judge Posner, I think you got the $3.7 million figure from page 34 of the plaintiff's appendix, where it talks about the value of the signs that are fabricated. It says right here, in the second area, under dimensions. The standard signs fabricated, it says there's a $2 million value annually. Freeway sign panels refurbished, $1.2 million. And raised pavement markers maintained, $0.5 million. That adds up to 3.7, and that may be where you got the 3.7. The annual budget of the highway sign shop section is not in the record. I do know the answer just from talking to folks at the department. It's $2.5 million for what it's worth, and it may not be worth anything because it's not in the record.
That his division is $2.5 million?
Yeah, his section.
His section. Thank
yes.
Thank you.
In terms of where he is on the depth chart of the department, he's either fourth or fifth. The top guy in the department is the Secretary of Transportation. Then there's the Director of Highways. Then there's the Bureau of Operations. I believe that the Engineer of Operations, which is the person to whom Mr. Moss reports, is the head of the Bureau of Operations. Mr. Curley may take a different view, and the record doesn't tell us which it is. So he's either fourth or fifth on the depth chart. He can make budget requests, and he does do so. And that, in fact, is important because it's one of the hallmarks that this court's cases find are indicative of a position that is routine exempt. That's what the warden in Pearson, the assistant warden in Riley, the bureau chief.
Yeah, but
chief,
of course these wardens, you know, the assistant warden who takes the place of the warden if the warden is out, you know, he's supervising a prison. It's an explosive situation. He has have to have tremendous discretion and act quickly, but this fellow in his sign department, it seems so modest. I mean, what is his real discretion? How could he do things that would disrupt state policy?
A few things. First, I should point out preliminarily that the job description says that he's afforded broad latitude in accomplishing his duties and exercises substantial independent judgment, and that, of course, is important in the Rutan analysis. As I mentioned, he recommends budgets and long-range program requests, and that involves the exercise of discretion. He's not just painting a sign or putting on an overlay. He's really mapping out what his section's going to be doing in the long term. He develops policies and procedures for maintaining the statewide system of signs and markers. And again, that's kind of mundane. It's just about manufacturing, repairing signs, but the same could be said of the plaintiffs in Tomczak and Selch. It's just basic, mundane public services, but those are maybe the kinds of services that could come back if not done well.
Well, but the Selch, I think you're right. Selch is similar, but in Selch, the fellow as the sub-district, you know, road manager or something, he was actually going to be doing things with the roads, you know, where you put a sign, where you put a stoplight. That's, of course, very consequential for people. But this fellow, or put it this way, as your opponent said, isn't he really, he's exercising judgment, of course, but isn't it really kind of technical judgment?
A lot
rather than sort of policy about signs. If he were placing the signs, if he was saying, you know, yeah, you're going to get a stop sign, and you're not going to get a stop sign, that I would think would be very significant. You have accidents and so on if you don't have the stop sign. But if he's just repairing signs or manufacturing signs to specifications, since the signs, you know, have to comply with international standards, how much a policy-making discretion does he have?
A lot of his job is technical and ministerial. And certainly I don't think we would be arguing that anybody beneath Mr. Moss would be Rutan exempt. But Mr. Moss runs the entire section, and running a section brings to bear different job qualifications. It brings to bear different qualities it brings to bear different tasks than being a line worker or even a supervisor in that section. There is the budget, formulating the budget, which is very important. It's very policy-like. There can be principal disagreement over what should be in the budget, whether it should be a tight budget or a loose budget. Sometimes these kinds of things are pertinent in elections. He has to resolve requests for exceptions to policies and procedures, requests for special signs and materials. That involves the exercise of discretion that only he in the highway sign shop has the ability to do. He consults with the operations engineer, and I'm taking all this from his position description, which I should mention parenthetically, Mr. Moss doesn't challenge. In fact, he acknowledged in the district court the authenticity, so this is more of a Riley-type case than a Kitty Brown-type case. He consults with the operations engineer on major decisions affecting the broad goals or policies of the Bureau of Operations. And again, that makes him a contributor, that he consults on these broader issues. The position description doesn't tell us in detail what those issues are, but at least it does tell us that he is contributing to the making of policy. He also has continuous contact with personnel and other bureaus of the department, and he is to coordinate with the Department of Corrections. So in some ways, in his little particular niche of highway sign manufacture and maintenance, he's the public face of the department. The public face of that section, representing it both within the department and with other departments in state government, including the Department of Corrections.
Is there some general classification for people of his authority throughout Illinois? He's, you know, like the GS levels and
I think he's listed as a technical manager 6, which I think does carry through to other departments in state government.
So what are the implications for the Illinois Civil Service if he is a policymaker who can be replaced? What does that leave of the civil service in Illinois? Is it just people have no authority at all? His 25... minions?
I'm not sure. Are you asking me whether he can benefit from the personnel code?
No, I'm thinking of the implications for the general balance between policymakers and civil servants in Illinois.
Right.
If I can interrupt, he's 4 deep on the depth chart?
4 or 5, yes.
So similarly situated, this would be exempting, let's say even 6, a half a dozen down in every major department.
I'm not sure. Department of Transportation is a really, really big department. It has an operating budget
Just following what Chief Judge Flom was saying, does this mean that everybody who supervises at least 25 people in Illinois is exempt?
No, I don't think it necessarily means that.
Everybody who supervises 25 employees necessarily have the same scope as this fellow? Certainly, if you have 25 employees, you're going to recommend to your boss budget, and he's going to delegate to you. The management people talk about this management by exception. So if you have 25 people, you make the policy judgments, if you want to call it that, that are relatively uncontroversial. When you get into something, which is iffy, it goes to the next level and so on up to the Secretary of Transportation or the Governor. So it seems to me the logic of your argument is that all these bottom level supervisors are policymakers, and I'm wondering how many is this 1/25th of the entire government employment in Illinois who are now exempt?
It really depends on what the position description says.
What would be someone who supervised 25? So suppose you're a police sergeant or something. I don't know how many policemen a sergeant supervises, but suppose he supervises 25 patrolmen. would he obviously have discretion. So wouldn't all the sergeants and all the head nurses and kind of the whole bottom tier of supervisors be exempt? That's what troubles me about your case, the possible implications for other jobs throughout the state.
May I answer the question? If you extrapolate out, it would mean 4%.
Right, exactly.
Assuming that it's exactly. 4% and the department has about 5,500 people, so that's slightly over 200 people in the department would be routine
right,
exempt.
Right, right.
And 4% is not a lot. I mean, on an absolute basis, it may be 200 people, but it's a very, very large department. But it really depends. Does the head nurse, is she able to or he able to recommend budgets? Does he or she talk to the next person up in terms of implementing broad goals of the larger group of which this nurse's operation is a part of? Is the nurse responsible for innovation, which Mr. Moss's position is in charge of, long-term planning? It really depends. If you have a position description that doesn't really indicate that the person has these kinds of responsibilities, I think I would be hard-pressed.
Except every good manager tries to delegate as much as possible to his subordinates. So you want to get their input about policy. You want to make them feel part of the team and so on. So I would think almost everybody who supervises 25 people has considerable discretion. Otherwise, why have a supervisor? Why not just have the 25 report directly to the next tier up?
It may be considerable discretion, but not in a way that would be enough to put the job into a routine exempt.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Feinman, let me just ask one last question. I think our closest case to deal with is Selch, where the court talked about being at the low end of the management hierarchy, I think we used. Now, in there, we noted that the position received, that is in Selch, 15 to 20 phone calls a day from public officials and citizens, and suggested there might be a political sensitivity. This post that Mr. Moss has, does he get calls from the county sheriffs, county commissioners about sign placement size, needed? I mean, in other words, is there much of a public outreach or contact from this position, apart from the ministerial aspect of operating the creation and the setup of the signs? I mean, is there a public interface, I guess?
There's no public interface in the sense that you've asked me in terms of dealing with the public or dealing with county sheriffs. That's not in the job description. He does.
Well, and I just wonder whether the record indicates whether the state police, for example, call this department. So Mr. Moss then becomes the public face for law enforcement contact, or as I say, county commission. We just don't know, I suppose.
We don't know. I can't make that claim. He does have contact with other personnel in the department.
No question. I understand that.
Coordinates with the Department of Corrections. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Feinman. Ms. Curley? Ms. Curley, do you know whether this position, Mr. Moss, is in any way the public face in his area? Does he deal with citizens and other public officials outside of IDOT?
Based on my conversations with him, the answer is no, he does not. That is not unlike Mr. Selch in the case you're talking about in that sub-district in Indiana. As you correctly state, Mr. Selch received phone calls on a daily basis, had to respond to immediate emergencies, and his immediate action or inaction certainly had an impact on people's ability to travel the roads if the snow was not off the roads and things, but Mr. Moss did not do those things. I would say that I would take exception to counsel's comment that Mr. Moss is number 4 or 5 down the chain of command. Truthfully, that's not even possible if you look at the structure of IDOT. You've got 10 bureaus and offices. And even below that, in Mr. Moss's, divisions, in Mr. Moss's division, I believe it's broken down further into about 10 bureaus and then broken down even further into 4 central bureaus. So you have layers of management above him, so many that he couldn't be the number 4 or 5 guy in IDOT. It's not even...
No, he didn't mean... I don't mean that.
Okay.
He just meant the number of layers above him. He wasn't suggesting he's the fourth most important official.
I misunderstood. I'm sorry. I apologize to counsel.
So it's just the layer. Yeah, how many layers
okay.
are down.
Yeah, you may say four or five layers right. down in terms of an organizational chart,
right,
but
exactly.
he was
yeah. Yeah.
buried no, far beneath that. So, okay, and again, I apologize yeah. for that misunderstanding. But again, his job's ministerial. It's technical. It's just, do we need to get a new sign, or can we just put an overlay on this sign? I mean, that's really it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Early. Thank you, Mr. Feinerman. The case is taken under advisement.